The Guardian.
Pod ahoy! It's Near Earth Orbit's top bi-weekly football podcast, primed and ready to sort you out re-planet football. Bish, Cypriot and Belarusian teams in the Champions League proper for the first time ever. Bosh, talk of falling standards heightened as Liverpool creep in too. Bash, Spain and Italy defy lazy Mediterranean stereotype by finally getting round to their new seasons. And Besh, Premier League already on to round three. Will Spurs lose their third straight? Will Pompey score their first goal? And will Stoke continue their charge up the table? All that plus transfer talk posts, and just when you think the pod's about to end, Barry Glendenning on top in-flight mushroom suit misadventures. Well then, off we go. On another voyage to understanding, calling it trivia, banality and needless chitter-chatter, on board, Kevin McCarra.
Hello, James.
Welcome back, Kevin. First mate, Barry G.
Hello, James.
And this could be interesting. Scott Murray in.
Hello there.
Hi, Scott. Now, last time you were on, you didn't say a peep till the 35th minute when, coincidentally, we were all saying goodbye. But your presence has been requested this time.
Well, why is this?
Well, somebody posted in saying that you were a legend on the Minute by Minutes. And could we get you on as soon as possible, which we've done? Let's try not to let them down, eh, Scott?
Okay. Well, so long as I can get in by, say, minute 32.
No, way before that. Let's start you off on the midweek Champions League action, because you were minute-by-minuting on the Anfield game.
Yeah.
You were tearing Rafa a new one, weren't you?
Well, it was quite a struggle to minute-by-minute that game.
Was it?
It was terrible. It was terrible. I mean, the first thing to say, Standard Liège were better than most people expected, I think, and look pretty decent side. I think they'd be, you know, fairly high up in the Premiership if they played.
Right, Standard Liège versus substandard Liverpool, as one of our posters, Hardcore Prawn, put it.
Well, exactly, but Liverpool were just abject. They were terrible.
What was so bad about them?
The whole mindset. They're just so defensive. The first couple of minutes they were pinging the ball around nicely down the left, Benny Yoon and Robbie Keane and Torres, and then within 5 minutes it was long balls up to Torres when it didn't work out. It's the same every week, and they just don't seem to have a plan B.
They didn't seem to have a plan A last night. Their midfield was really congested. They had, their wide men weren't actual wingers and kept cutting inside, meaning that it was big traffic jams in the centre of the pitch. They weren't good enough to play around Standard Liège's players. They didn't have the width to go around them, so the only alternative was to try and go over them, which didn't work. Steven Gerrard, some of his passing was abject, to say the least, you know, pinging 45-yard passes into Rose Ed of the stand and what have you. And Rafa Benitez didn't make a change until, I think it was the hour mark, when he brought on that Dutch person whose name escapes me at the moment.
Ryan Babel.
Mm. And it was from a Babel cross that they scored eventually.
The only decent cross of the entire night from Liverpool, as far as I can remember. Yes.
Well, Kevin, I'm reading a headline here in today's Guardian talking about a limp and lucky Liverpool. I have to say, one of our posters saying, this is the media's truth. This is MC's little complaint about the treatment that Liverpool get here and in another outpost of the media. This is the media's truth. Liverpool play terrible football, and if they win, they're always lucky. Arsenal play beautiful football, and if they lose, they're always unlucky. And heaven forbid that anything come along to disturb that. Well, I have to say that Benitez is doing precious little to disturb that notion.
Well, actually, I don't mean people do say Arsenal are unlucky. They say they've got too thin a squad, don't we?
Right.
That's what we say. I don't remember saying they're unlucky. Well, anyway, but the typecasting of Jonas is a terrible thing. We do the typecasting. That's our job.
Yeah. We could typecast Liverpool fans, in fact,
Speaking of typecasting, last year the big thing was Rafa and his rotation. This year it is all lack of width, which is probably not a problem his mother thought he'd ever have to deal with. But it is an issue, isn't it?
Well, it is an issue. And after the game, he said it was a big improvement from Liverpool. And I thought the compassion I felt for Liverpool fans at that moment, this was a glowing moment last night compared to the earlier games. But yes, there's a lack of width. And we see him trying to sign Albert Riera. And I apologise for getting around in circles, but Benitez does that and I have to follow him. He does this thing of buying lots of players of a kind of vaguely attacking disposition who are kind of medium priced, and then it ends up costing a fortune, but they're all kind of not quite good enough. And I fear that Albert Riera might be the same. We're talking about a guy who we know from the record books that were with Man City, but spookily no one can remember what he did there 2 years ago. We know he wasn't in the Spain squad for Euro 2008. And whether he might be a perfectly decent player, but whether he's going to suddenly give Liverpool a penetration on the wings, I don't know. Also, a temporary problem. Keane got taken off last night, and I think I noticed him once when he missed a chance, but I really almost had forgotten he was on the pitch. So the partnership with Torres is still, shall we say, at an early stage.
I think it's also interesting that Benitez's reign now, for me, is just mirroring Julio's, almost step by step, in that he's had some early cup success, a little improvement in the league, and now just this plethora of ridiculous overpriced signings. In fact, the only difference being is that under Julio, there was a sort of smidgen of progressive football with Lippmann and McAllister. There's been none of that, and this is 5 years now. Hmm. And I think the scales soon are going to start falling from Liverpool fans' eyes. Well, they may not. They should do, but they... We'll see.
Well, I tell you, let's get on to brilliant but unlucky often Arsenal, then, who stormed past FC 20 yesterday. School starts next week, but Arsenal already back in form, my notes say.
You write those notes yourself.
I did, actually. Yes. That's all my own work. It was an impressive return to form after their mishaps at Craven Cottage, having said that they were up against Steve McLaren's 20.
Was this his only job offer Steve McLaren got? Mm. And he's taken a club that overperformed, if anything, last season by beating Ajax to get into the Champions League. Mm. And now... it's a hard job for anyone, he'll get the blame if it goes wrong domestically.
But good news anyway, because Theo Walcott had a nice run, scored a goal, set up another. Cesc Fabregas came back from a hamstring injury, and if we're talking about clubs dependent on midfielders, Arsenal certainly needed him back.
Yeah, I mean that proves the point about the thinness.
Indeed so. Okay, other news. Well, Atletico Madrid came back from a goal down to knock out Schalke. They were a goal down from the first leg. Aguero coming back in and leading them to victory, etc. But meanwhile, after the preliminaries, we now know that making their debut in the group stage will be the UEFA Cup holders Zenit St. Petersburg, home for now anyway of Arshavin. Also, Romanian side CFR 1907 Cluj. I think that's how you pronounce that.
Could you tell us a bit about them, Jim?
I certainly can. Cluj. The first Belarusian... Oh, that's so unfair, listeners. I know nothing about Cluj, except they were founded in 1907, I'm guessing.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, or maybe it's 7 minutes past seven. I don't know.
That's not the Belarusian team, is it?
No, that's the Romanian side. Yeah. The Belarusian qualifiers, of course, are FC Bati Borisov. So we have some Bati boys on their way into the Champions League.
There were people queuing overnight to buy tickets for that game last night.
Really?
But it was a huge, huge thing, whatever it is.
Is this the Borisov?
Yes.
All right. Any other details?
No, that's it.
Listen, if you're listening to the show in either Romania or Belarus, and I do apologise on a complete lack of knowledge on that.
Well, Jonathan Wilson had an article about the Belarusian team, Bati, on the site on Monday or Tuesday. So,
did you read it?
I did, actually, yeah.
And well, tell us about it.
I can't remember a great deal. I do know they're one sort of linked to a big tractor company, as is the customary with a lot of these Eastern, they're either, you know, linked to the army or linked to agricultural machinery.
Inaugural Cypriot entrance as well. We've got somebody in from Cyprus, Anorthosis.
Famagusta. I have been to one of their games.
All right, then.
I was there with Rangers.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Many years ago. But,
it wasn't that long ago, Kevin.
I think it was, because I was still working in Scotland at the time, it was a while, yeah. But they had reasonably good players, quite well financed, and were capable enough.
Right, back then. Now... Well, they put out Olympiacos, I believe.
That's
I think
good.
The one thing we can safely say about both these sides is that they'll both end up in, or well, all three of them will end up in Manchester United's group when the draw is made later today.
Anyway, now, do we have time just to squeeze in a bit of Carling Cup chat before that little sting announces the start of part two? I think perhaps we do. West Ham scored and progressed to the third round, but after a shaky start, they were a goal down at home to Macclesfield. Was it at home? Was it home?
Yes.
Plenty of boos and whistles and cries of you'll be sacked in the morning from the Upton Park faithful for manager Alan Kirbishley. Bolton, West Brom and Hull, all Premier League teams who went out.
I think Alan Kirbishley is getting quite harsh treatment at the hands of West Ham's fans, who seem to be the London equivalent of Newcastle's fans in that they're rather deluded as to their station in life, think they're a massive club and aren't really. West Ham's fans, their hardcore fans, do seem to be a rather hard lot to please if any of my visits to Upton Park, I've always found them quite unpleasant and unsavoury.
Have you tried to please them?
Well, I haven't tried that hard, must be
no,
said.
I thought not.
Anyway, it sounds like we should be turning our thoughts to Spain, Sid, and even a bit of Italy chat, which we'll be doing right after this.
Football Weekly Extra on guardian.co.uk.
Right, well, Sid Lowe will be joining us hopefully very, very shortly. First off, though, the Italian season gets underway this weekend. And joining us now on the line is top Italian football expert, Susie Campanali. Susie, hello.
Hello, one and all.
Hello, one and all, indeed. That one and all being, well, me, James Richardson, clearly, and then Kevin McCarra.
Hello, Susie.
Hi.
Scott Murray.
Hi there, Susie.
And Barry Glendenning, who's really keen to know more about what awaits us in this opening weekend and beyond, Susie.
Well, it's a historic opening weekend for a number of reasons. In previous years, the draw had been organised so the top teams couldn't face each other in the first three rounds. It's much like a seeding system. But this season, that has been scrapped, and we begin with a bang. Fiorentina, Juventus, Roma, Napoli, and Inter travelling to Antonio Cassano's Sampdoria.
Woof.
We also get to see Milan begin their brand new team against Bologna. Now, this is going to be interesting because we've got Shevchenko, Ronaldinho, Kaká, who at the moment is injured, Pato, Seydorf, and Inzaghi, and Borriello, who's also injured. And Ancelotti, the poor thing, has to put all these together.
Yeah, he didn't seem very happy about the return of Shevchenko. Is that right?
No, he's really not. Basically, he said there was never any chance of getting Shevchenko. He's a Chelsea player. And he announced this in a press conference 2 hours before Milan announced that he was coming back. So nice to know he's been kept in the loop. So.
Yeah. And plenty of ex-players like Costa Curta and Boban coming out and saying they would never have signed, re-signed, as it is in fact, Shevchenko. Costa Curta making the point that Pato and Paloschi are the kind of young forwards who deserve to have space, who needed to be playing without pressure in order to develop properly. Instead, you bring back Shevchenko, which causes all sorts of problems. And already we see that Paloschi's been sent to, or half-sold, in the curious Italian fashion, to Serie B team Parma.
Yeah, he's gone out, which was, to be honest, it was always going to happen. I'll be frankly surprised if Borriello stays as well.
No!
Why?
Well, I like Borriello, and I thought he'd be a top return for Milan this year. Rather than
I think he's a one-season wonder. I think he's the new Rolando Bianchi.
Oh, right, OK. The old Rolando Bianchi, meanwhile, has now gone to Torino, is that right?
Yes, he has, and for about half, possibly slightly less than what Manchester City paid from a year ago.
Mm, well, there you go. That's Man City for you. Now, you mentioned Sampdoria with Antonio Cassano taking on Inter. How are Jose Mourinho's Inter looking?
Well, they had been solid but unimpressive, really, during the pre-season friendlies. They kept winning 1-0 or drawing 0-0. But that all went a bit wrong in the Italian Super Cup, where they draw 2-2 with Roma. And they only won on a penalty shootout, a dramatic penalty shootout, in fact, because Totti could have won it with the dream comeback, but he hit the bar. So they kept going into sudden death, and Javier Zanetti ended up winning it with the first penalty he's taken in his entire life.
But they remain the favourites, Inter.
They do, basically. Yeah. But they're still working on it, because Mourinho is still determined to bring in Riccardo Quaresma. That'll widen the team a bit more. He wants another winger. And also Crespo and David Suazo probably on their way out.
Susie, can I ask you about Inter? I mean, obviously winning three titles in a row wasn't enough. So what does Mourinho meant to do to vindicate his appointment? What's the minimum?
Well, basically, having won the title for the last three years running, depending on the Calciopoli one, He needs to win in the Champions League, because Serie A is done, as it were. They've done that. They need to win in the Champions League now.
Do they just need to win, or is a good showing enough, either getting to the final or the semis? Because Inter have been terrible in the European Cup for decades now.
Yeah, they have. They haven't been in the final since the 60s. So basically, they would have to at least get to the semi-final, absolute minimum. And if he gets the semi-final and doesn't win Serie A, he's in real trouble.
Is Serie A a good enough platform now to build a European Cup-winning team, or is it distinctly at a lower level than Spain and England?
Oh, absolutely not.
Are you sure?
Yes. I think that's complete rubbish.
Thank you.
No offence. But, I mean, if you look at it, like the Ballon d'Or, four of the last five European Players of the Year have been from Serie A.
Mm.
We've had Nedved, Shevchenko, Cannavaro, Kaká. Now we've got Ronaldinho. We had three Ballon d'Or winners playing for Milan alone at the moment.
It's just that I watched Milan playing Arsenal in San Siro last season and felt quite embarrassed for them.
Last year was a bit of a strange one because due to a number of injuries and also the fact that Milan put all their eggs in one basket of going after the Club World Cup in December, they completely changed all of their fitness regime so that they would be at peak fitness in December and kind of thought they would coast the rest of it, which was a very stupid idea.
Beyond Inter and conceivably Milan, you've got Fiorentina, Juve and Roma who would all be regarded as possible contenders. Very, very briefly, a quick word on those three?
Juventus are solid and Ranieri is, well, he hasn't exactly impressed the fans recently with his purchasing. Let's just say he's brought in Christian Poulsen as his star signing and Amari, who is, you know, he's all right, but he's a little bit inconsistent and injury prone. Then you've got Roma, who have just signed Julio Baptista and Jeremy Menez, who's a very good buy, very interesting player.
He takes over from Mancini out on the left wing.
He does take over from Amantino Mancini, who's gone to Inter. But the problem with him is, problem with Roma is that they have, as always, a very excellent starting 11 and not much else.
Mm. Arsenal-esque. Okay, and what about Fiorentina, who are back in the Champions League for the first time in 8 years? Are they going to be between two stools, as it were?
It's entirely possible that they'll be stuck because they don't really know a huge amount about the Champions League. They were never that successful in it. 6 years ago, but they were in Serie C2, which is the Italian fourth division, 6 years ago because they're bankruptcy. So if you look at it, it's an amazing achievement just to be there. But technically, they deserve to be in the Champions League for the last 2 years running. But because of Calciopoli, the points penalties, they were left out.
Mm.
But I think they thoroughly deserve to be in the top four.
Well, they're a very attractive side with a very forward-thinking group of directors behind them. So wishing them plenty of luck. Susie, thank you very much for bringing us that. We'll be catching up with you, I hope, again on the crazy world of Syria.
Hope so.
Thank you very much, Susie. Bye-bye. Well, Susie's been involved in Italian football for a long time. She writes for Channel 4's website, which, curiously, they still keep going, and I believe it's still one of the most popular parts of the Channel 4 website, the Italian football bit. I mean, it's now six years since Channel 4 dropped Italian football, or failed to re-sign the rights, whatever.
Let it go.
She was involved in the Channel 4 coverage and generally kind of very up to speed on stuff. Now,
it's nice to have someone who's up to speed on stuff talking about Italian football in a podcast,
isn't it? Isn't it, Barry? Now, let's try. Speaking of people who are up to speed, etc., let's try Sid Lowe in Madrid. Sid Lowe in Madrid.
Hello.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. Do you know, I wasn't sure what we were going to talk to you about, because I know the Spanish League is starting up there this weekend, but there don't seem to be any interesting fixtures at all. Am I wrong?
Well, first weekend, I think that's more or less true. But it's not entirely true, but it's not exactly a kind of big, exciting start, although Madrid do go away to Riazor to play Deportivo, which is a stadium where they haven't won for 18 years.
Yeah.
So there's a real feeling that they may actually get off to a poor start for the first time in ages. Personally, I think they will win. But that's probably the big game. But in a way, it's not so much about the first weekend at the moment. It's about what will happen beyond that for the rest of the season. Obviously, you've had the fact that Atletico Madrid have now finally broken that jinx and are back in the Champions League, and back in the Champions League in real style as well, after hammering Schalke. And also the constant goings on about signings. Madrid are still trying to sign someone. Whether or not they'll succeed is another matter entirely, of course, because Ramon Calderon keeps having doors slammed in his face.
Mm. Sid, can I ask you about that? David Villa has now signed until the end of the century, I think, at Valencia. It's around about that, isn't it? What possessed him? He's one of the guys, I assume, that could have gone to Madrid. I assume the financial offer was attractive, but then so would Real Madrid's offer have been.
Yeah, it's really weird because, I mean, David Villa wanted to go. There's absolutely no doubt about that. He wanted to go to Real Madrid. He's wanted the chance to go to Real Madrid for a long time. The financial offer at Real Madrid would have been big, although probably Valencia bettered it, but it would have been big. He would have had the offer of anything like as much as that if he'd gone to the Premiership, but he was never keen to leave Spain. And it is a strange one. It's also a strange one from Valencia's point of view because they're in massive, massive debt. There were members of the board saying to the new president, look, don't keep him. If they offer big, big money, don't keep him. We need the money. They're well over 250 million euros in debt. The problem is, of course, that this new president came in and the first thing he did was promise that David Silva and David Villa, the two stars from the European Championships, wouldn't be going. And he felt, it's all well and good me resolving the debt, But if the first thing I do, pretty much, is sell my two best players, the fans are going to kill me.
It's a great thing, in a way. A very good player staying with Valencia rather than going to Real or Barca. But, I mean, on the negative side, does it show a lack of ambition on his part? What's his personality like?
Well, it's a weird one, because actually he's never shown any lack of ambition before. I mean, he moved from Sporting Gijón very young to Real Zaragoza, and was extremely successful there, moved to Valencia, and was very definitely angling for a move away from there. I think what he said yesterday was that my development will be just as good at Valencia as it would at Real Madrid. Now, he's sort of right in that his development as a player might be as good, but his chances to win things almost certainly won't be. Certainly his profile almost certainly won't be. I mean, even something so basic as the fact that Valencia aren't playing in the Champions League this year and Real Madrid, of course, are. All of those things do make it a strange move. I don't think he is a player that lacks ambition. I suppose his argument, counter-argument to that would be, well, hang on a minute, I've just been top scorer in the European Championships. Mm. I mean, how much more ambition do you want?
Yeah, fair enough. A couple of questions, Sid. First off, Julius B says, hearing you describe last week Arjen Robben's performance in the Spanish Super Cup is absolutely brilliant. It's like hearing just how hot my ex-girlfriend is. It hurts. So tell me, Sid, being objective and dispassionate, is my new girlfriend, Robinho, in brackets for $29 million, hotter than my ex-girlfriend, Robben, at $20 million?
Well, I can tell him that his ex-girlfriend is extremely hot, yeah.
Right.
I think that this is a difficult one. I mean, I personally think that if he can stay fit, Arjen Robben can be as good as Robinho. I mean, I think Chelsea fans probably saw that the first 6 months or so at Stamford Bridge. He was very, very good. The question mark is, can he stay fit? And I think I might be wrong with this, so treat it with kid gloves, but I think it's now 4 years since he played 7 consecutive games because of injury, and it just hasn't happened for him. Robinho, again, I mean, from the Real Madrid experience, the argument with Robinho would be there have been periods when he's looked absolutely fantastic, when he's looked like a really, really great player. Unfortunately, there's been periods, and I think probably you could put together, over the course of his 3-year Real Madrid career, maybe one really good season's worth of performances. There's also a feeling that it hasn't quite happened for him in the very big games. But that said, he's tended to play on the left-hand side of midfield for Madrid, which isn't really his position. He's always felt a little bit uncomfortable at Madrid for whatever reason, partly, I think, because he's never been particularly welcome, and that hasn't helped. So I do think there's the potential for him to be very, very good at Chelsea. One of the problems is that he has one of those problems that English fans like to claim that all foreigners have, which, of course, is not quite fair, but that he does go missing from games. And I do think perhaps the increased physical condition of Premiership players might be problematic for him.
I guess we have to assume that Scolari will handle him better than, say, Schuster, because he wasn't all that impressive for Real Madrid, to be frank, was he?
No, well, this is it. Although, bizarrely enough, Schuster actually handled him okay compared to a lot of coaches at Real Madrid. Now, obviously, Bradley Luxemburger was a guy that tried to build a team around him, but Luxemburger's time at Real Madrid was frankly pretty comic, and it really never worked. He had a lot of the Spanish players railed against him. It just didn't work institutionally and in footballing terms. Schuster backed, you know, most importantly last year when he came back late from Brazil duty, and he came back late after all the talk about how he'd been at a nightclub till 6 a.m. and gone out and asked a bouncer for 40 condoms, and everybody thought, this is a guy who hasn't played well for 2 years, he's going to get his ass absolutely kicked in. Instead, Schuster did the reverse. He put his arm around his shoulder, and Robinho, after that, it was almost as if he needed that kind of help, that kind of support, because after that, he about 10 or 11 games where he was really genuinely brilliant. And I remember writing a piece last year saying, wow, hang on a minute, this guy that we've been waiting to be the new Pelé, well, he's not going to be the new Pelé, of course, but he might actually turn out to be really good. Then he got injured and everything fell away from him. So he's definitely a player that you can look at and think, yeah, he could be great. But the truth is, you say, he hasn't been yet.
So in the meantime, your ex-girlfriend, Julius B, was the one you should have stuck with, perhaps. Who knows? Now, what about Albert Riera? Is he any good?
I must confess, I mean, there's the potential for him to be a very good player. He was really very good indeed for 6 months or so last season when Espanyol worked themselves into a Champions League position. But then Espanyol, I think I'm right in saying, only won twice in the last 19 games last season. The whole thing collapsed. He fell out with the coach, the board, and pretty much everybody else. And his performance, too, also collapsed. So having got a Spain call up, he was then left out of Spain squad, and nobody questioned it. I can't help thinking that Albert Riera is another one of these players that Liverpool buy, who's a very good player for a team that finishes 7th, 8th, maybe even as high as 6th or 5th, but probably not a player for a team that's going to win the league.
Right, but he's gone to Liverpool, so that's fine. Right, okay, Sid, any other business?
Well, I mean, the other business is waiting to see who on earth Real Madrid are going to sign next, or try and sign next and be told no to. And really, it's a case of settling down those final two or three transfers over the transfer window. I suspect there won't be a huge amount of movement now between now and Monday. And then, of course, everyone will just wait and see how teams start the season. Particularly, obviously, everyone's quite interested in Barcelona, whether they've really turned it around, because they have looked good in pre-season. And I also think they've got very lucky. They tried to sell Samuel Eto'o, who's a guy they should never try and sell, and they've managed to keep him. If he can keep his big mouth shut, I think he's going to be a great player again.
Yeah, magnificent. Sid, thank you very much for that update. Hopefully you'll have some time for us Monday morning to find out what happens in this exciting round of opening fixtures.
Hope so. Cheers.
Nice one. Thanks, Sid. That's Sid Lowe for you. Magnificent. And a quick look at one or two other posts. Hardcore Prawn again, saying, having seen the Belgians get to the semis of the Olympics and being moderately impressed with them, any chance of them getting back to their old World Cup form of the 80s and 90s? Kevin, you'll probably know about this. Is it strong, the Belgian league, right now?
Well, I've no idea.
No, okay. But anyway, yeah, happy days, those. Mike65IE in Ireland says, Fernando has to be a pod regular, bigging up Free, dissing Mariah Carey and talking of voodoo frogs. And plenty of love for Fernando, indeed, on the post this week. But Miss Rastrick's pointing out that particularly Fernando was wrong when he said that finishing fifth in the World Cup qualifying campaign, were Brazil to do that, wouldn't mean a game against New Zealand, as that will be, New Zealand will be taking on the fifth-placed Asian team. Instead, Brazil, or whoever finishes fifth in the South American qualifiers, would be playing off against the fourth-placed team from CONCACAF, which would be Costa Rica, Trinidad, Tobago, Jamaica, or the like. Interesting. Sorry for misquoting you, Chuck Schick. You were saying that Liverpool are the biggest route runners right now. Don Tano in Hull says, Clinton Morrison wears Coventry's number 1+9 shirt. Anyone have any idea why? He reckons it might be a government initiative to subliminally school championship fans. But I believe, or rather more parochially, it's actually a bit of an echo of Ivan Zamorano's old shirt number at Inter, where he
couldn't get the number 10.
Exactly, so he did
1+9 instead.
Yeah, I think that's the case, probably. Yeah. Luke Garrett in Australia, wondering why we didn't mention the start of the A-League. I think you know the answer to that, Luke. And that brings us to the end of posts this week. But very, very shortly, we're going to be looking forward to the Premier League weekend, round 3.
Football Weekly with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
Now, it is an exciting round of Premier League fixtures, this. Man United presumably are not involved because they're taking on... Zenit in the European Super Cup Friday night?
Yep.
Okay. Best of luck to all concerned for that. But in their absence, Chelsea will be taking on Spurs. Here's a stat. August 1993 was the last time that Spurs won a Premier League visit to any one of the so-called Big Four. August 1993.
But I can see Spurs getting a real shoo-in in this game, actually. Right. It could be 4-5, 6-0.
But Berbatov, we're hearing talk that he might be recalled. Kevin, do you think that's true? And if so, is it a wise move?
I'm going to look forward to seeing it if he does come back. I feel talking about how amazingly sulky he is in training. Can you imagine how sulky he'll be if he gets brought back against his wishes? But I find Spurs strange. I mean, by all means, get as much as you can for Berbatov, but in the meantime, the team's half built, still under construction, 6 points gone already, and maybe 3 more on Sunday.
Well, they've bought Pavlyuchenko. Have they bought him now? Is that confirmed, or is it on the way?
Not in the last check. I think it's still in process.
Oh, okay. Should that go through? Is that a good signing for them?
Well, I mean, as we understand it at the Guardian, despite what they say about losing interest in Arshavin, they've been obsessed with Arshavin, and I assume they still think, well, partner him with Pavlyuchenko.
Oh, the both of them coming in?
Well, it would make sense, wouldn't it? They play together for Russia, but that might be a complete delusion on my part.
He had a decent Euro 2008, didn't he?
Pavlyuchenko?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he missed a fair few one-on-ones, but he scored a couple.
Well, he did well in the UEFA Cup as well.
He's not a special player, but he's strong and he scores a few goals. I mean, I think he does play better with Arshavin.
You know. Right. Deco 2-for-2, will he be 3-for-3, do you think? More Deco magic coming in?
Well, he's almost, wasn't really known as a goal scorer, was he? Particularly at Barcelona, so I suspect not. But he may play very well, but I can't see any more
he's
goals.
He's playing at Spurs this weekend.
Point. Mm.
Okay, meanwhile, elsewhere, Aston Villa taking on Liverpool. Limp and lucky Liverpool, is that going to run out for them, do you think, this weekend?
To the Villa? Villa, I thought would do quite well this season. I still think they will, and they score loads of goals, but God, they lose a lot. Mm. Depends, they might be able to get Cuellar, they're signing from Rangers, fit for this game. He's back in training now. And I think they could do with him because if they could defend half decently, Villa would be a real danger.
Well, Gareth Barry, it'd be interesting to see how he approaches this particular match. He didn't look particularly in sorts last weekend in their defeat against Stoke. Scott, what do you think?
Well, he had a decent game first time round. It was in Man City they played in the opening weekend. He did pretty well there. And he's going to be playing this Liverpool team who are out of sorts, to say the least.
Yeah, and no Gerrard as well, no Stevie G.
All right, yeah. Well, he might be pining for him.
Right.
It could be a very sad, sad state of affairs.
What, for Liverpool?
Yes.
All right, then. How do you feel about Arsenal, Newcastle, United?
Well, I don't know. Newcastle were pretty impressive in the first week against Manchester United.
Yeah.
But then that was sort of half a Manchester United side. And what's the Newcastle midfielder with the long hair, the new guy?
He does look good, doesn't he?
Gutierrez.
He looks fantastic. Yeah. He looks a sign in the season so far. So, and you know, Arsenal are not playing that well either. They were dreadful against Fulham last weekend. So you never know.
Mm. 30 shots so far, Arsenal, and only one goal. However, they do have a cracking record against Newcastle, especially at home. They beat them three times there last year.
The other thing is Michael Owen, of course. It'd be maybe three goals in successive games. And of course, Capello names his squad on Sunday. So the return of Michael Owen.
Oh, that's interesting, isn't it, Barry?
It's fascinating. Yeah.
Right. Anything you'd like to comment on those three matches so far? There's the big three games, I would suggest.
No, particularly. I can't really see Newcastle beating Arsenal. But they have to.
Can they hold them to a draw, do you think, given their...
Possibly. I mean, they have to beat somebody good in the league at some point. Hmm. The law of averages would suggest they have to... because they haven't done it in so long. So, you know, this could be the day to know.
Okay, but it probably won't be, is your feeling.
Yes, but then that really doesn't matter what I predict.
Elsewhere, Bolton Wanderers taking on West Brom. Everton, do you know West Brom? They're off to a poor start. Not much chance of that turning around, do you think, against Bolton? Elmander out for ages. He's got a hamstring, hasn't he? What's that? It's going to take, 6 weeks or something, do you think?
Yeah, and people are sort of Bolton fan complaining somewhere that this is more money than they've ever spent, and he doesn't think the
team... How much did they spend? Was it 14 million or something?
Well, he was eight, wasn't he, Elmander?
He was eight, okay.
Yeah, but I don't know. Some people said 10. I don't know. Who knows? But it was a lot of money by Bolton standards. So Gary Megson was getting it in the neck.
Everton taking on Portsmouth. Portsmouth are in some trouble. Bottom of the table. Yet to find the net this season. They failed to score, in fact, in six of their last seven league outings because, of course, they had that rubbish run at the end of last season. The Crouch-Defoe partnership yet to really take flight.
Well, they've yet to be given a decent pass. In fact, I've now seen them three times this season.
Well, what's the problem? Is it Cranshaw being out or what?
Well, I mean, but Cranshaw is somebody a lot of the fans at Portsmouth think has underperformed, but certainly you'd like to give them a shot on Monday because they created nothing against Manchester United and were beaten far more substantially than the 1-0 score would suggest. There's a real lack of flair in midfield. Utaka was dropped. He's been a bit of a disappointment of late. And really, you expect more kind of verve from a higher Redknapp's teams, and it's quite plodding at the moment at Portsmouth.
Mm, whereas Everton, Yakubu's on a bit of a roll.
Yeah, Everton are an extraordinarily resilient team, aren't they? I mean, they're just beginning to make signings now, but they've still managed to get going in the league.
Mm. Okay. Hull City taking on Wigan. Hull are unbeaten in their last 11 games at the KC Stadium, winning 8 of those. There you go. Middlesbrough taking on Stoke City.
Ooh.
And last chance for Mido to score another goal before August ends, and he shuts up shop for the season. So there you go. That's the home to Stoke. Good chance there. West Ham taking on Blackburn Rovers. Ooh, the first return of Paul Ince as manager to Upton Park.
Well, Alan Kirbishley would be delighted about that because it might take some of the heat off him when the fans are getting stuck into Ince. This is a huge game for West Ham, and if they lose, you could see Kirbishley getting the bullet next week because apparently relations between him and the chairman are at an all-time low because of the Anton Ferdinand transfer. So he could possibly win the famous sack race next week if they get beaten by Blackburn. And all the signs would suggest that they will get beaten by Blackburn.
Mm. Well, there you go. And finally, Sunderland are hosting Manchester City. Barry, Sunderland. Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they're doing well. They beat Nottingham Forest in the Carling Cup last night in what was a thoroughly unconvincing win from what I saw. They equalised late doors, and then David Healy scored on his debut, which is good because I was slightly concerned he might come and then not score for 20 games. His confidence would be shot to and then he'd end up getting farmed out on loan. But
if you're one of those people who think that they are a kind of that he is a championship striker, he was basically playing. He scored against championship opposition. No?
Yeah, but at least he scored. He got off the. I mean, it was just a tap in, but it's a goal.
And,
I mean, Robbie Keane hasn't scored yet for Liverpool, and you can see that maybe already that he's trying too hard.
Right.
And this might stop Healy from doing that. I think Healy's already scored as many, if not more, goals than he did all last season his first appearance.
Can we say it was City watching on TV last week against West Ham when Martin Noble ruined my fantasy team score by getting sent off? That's most unhelpful of him. But City actually looked perfectly decent. You think, actually, if a team plays all right, they're not a club in crisis. You think this is a reasonable team?
What company? What a great debut from him.
I remember him as a youngster playing central defence. I didn't realise he could play defensive midfield as well as that. And of course, they've now got Joe to come back and, show
his... How different is it, do you think, central defence to defensive midfielder?
I'd have thought very differently. Because you're not marking anyone really.
If only Sean Ingle was here to tell us.
I don't know.
Well, central defender is... It's very... technical position. You have to work in tandem.
If you played central defender in Europe, for example, would that not make you quite well equipped to play defensive midfielder in the Premier League?
I really don't know.
Is there not a lot more decision making in central midfield? There's more areas you might have to go into.
I'm hinting at this notion that European teams tend to play it out from the back a little bit more than say your average Premier League side. But clearly, anyway. Anton Ferdinand won't be playing because he's got a hamstring thing, is that right? Yeah, he's recovering from hamstring trouble. So no help for Sunderland's backline there. Elano has scored 4 goals in his last 3 league games. There you go. Now, I have to say, I think we've run out of information fuel for this week's pod flight. So we'll probably bring everything to a grinding halt.
I think we've been flying on fumes for about 25 minutes.
Don't tell them.
We're like that Ryanair flight with the mushroom soup. We should have been diverted.
What was that?
A carton of mushroom soup fell out of one of the overhead compartments.
Right.
And as luck would have it, hit someone who was mushroom soup intolerant. So they
even to a carton of... Oh, it actually opened.
Yeah, it spilled on them.
Right.
I don't know if it was a flight, someone had packed mushroom soup, or if it belonged to the Ryanair stewards or whatever. But as of all the rotten luck, it hit somebody who was mushroom soup intolerant. Started to suffocate.
No, I'm just going to stop you right there, Barry. If I was to try and take mushroom soup in my hand baggage and put it in an overhead locker, it must be hand baggage, onto a flight, they would stop me right away. I can't take liquids without a doctor's certificate, and I don't think any doctor's going to get a certificate.
Unless you put it in one of those little plastic bags.
No, but then it has to be less than 100 milliliters.
It's a small tin or a small carton.
Maybe
half a carton.
What are they doing taking half a carton of liquid mushroom soup?
We're not here to second guess this. This is what happened.
It's an improbable
story. I'm going to go out on a limb and... hazard a guess the mushroom soup was the incredibly overpriced mushroom soup that one can buy on Ryanair flights.
If
you don't want to buy lottery tickets or a small box of Pringles for £28 instead.
Right. But anyway.
Yes. So it hit somebody. It spilled on somebody who was mushroom soup intolerant. They were on the verge of death.
So then what happened?
So then they were diverted to an airport so this person could get medical attention and not die.
And the connection with what we were talking about is?
I've totally forgotten. I was saying that our pod had run out of fuel.
Why, did they run out of fuel on their diversion?
No, but I'm saying our pod should have been diverted.
I've got a key question, Barry. Yes. Is this the same flight where the oxygen masks dropped and the passengers had to put them on?
No, that was a different flight.
I imagine it's all one tremendous event.
It's been a bad week for Ryanair.
Yeah, right, but that was when they were running, they depressurised. And apparently they only had 30 seconds to put on their masks, which is quite a long time to put a mask on, I think you're fine. Yeah. But anyway, before everyone blacked out in the apartment. But,
This plane chat is like the reverse of a bonus track on the pod.
Plane chat. All right, well, that's enough plane chat for this week. But we will be back on Monday, so be sure to email in your airline-based anecdotes to us at the, not email, of course, post them in at the usual site and play Pick the Score and Fantasy League as well. My team's doing very badly, Kevin, so is yours by the sound of it. Barry doesn't have one. Scott, have you got a team?
Nope.
All right then. Okay, we'll be back on Monday. Many thanks in the meantime to Kevin, to Scott and to Barry and to producer Pete version 3.0. We'll see you next week.
Thank you. For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.